From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
It's very, very shady that somebody with the political power of Congressman Barr to be delivering the keynote address at an organization that identifies itself as a group of racialist paleoconservatives. He was speaking at the exact same podium where one day earlier a member of the organization had elicited laughter and applause by referring to black people as a bunch of monkeys.
With threats of more revelations on the sex lives of Congress members, we'll expose who else they're in bed with. We'll look at Congressmember Bob Barr and Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott's relationship with a white supremacist group. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The Iraqi army says Western warplanes violated Iraqi airspace on Tuesday and fired two rockets at an area north of the southern city of Basra. It was the first report of a military incident since the United States and Britain halted a 70-hour air campaign against Iraq early on Sunday. It was not immediately clear how serious the reported attack was, but similar attacks in the past had been isolated. In the Iraqi news agency, which carried the statement by Army's spokesman, gave it a low profile. The spokesman said the Western planes had violated the Iraqi airspace in southern Iraq at 9:15 a.m. He said the planes flew outside the range of Iraq's air defense forces. The UN Security Council will try again today to bridge the wide gap between Iraq's views on UN sanctions and what other countries expect it to do before the economy can recover. Reuters is reporting that Israeli warplanes blasted pro-Iranian Hezbollah positions near the eastern border with Syria, the second Israeli raid of the day on Lebanon. He said the planes hit the broadcasting antenna of Hezbollah's radio station and another unidentified target near Janta in the central Baqa Valley. Diplomats are talking about the UN Security Council and its attempts to bridge the wide gap between Iraq's views and UN sanctions, what other countries expect it to do. It'll take weeks, they say, and can only get underway after the United States, France, and Britain reach agreement among themselves and expand consultations to China and Russia, both of whom were against the recent attacks. All are permanent council members. At the moment, however, the sharply divided 15-nation council could agree only on a sentence statement yesterday, saying it was assessing its approach to the Iraq question and how best to implement Security Council resolutions. Iraq is rejecting any suggestions that inspectors of the UN Special Commission in charge of dismantling its weapons of mass destruction could return. We're joined on the phone right now from Baghdad by Kathy Kelly. She is with the group Voices in the Wilderness, headed to Iraq just as the bombs started to fall. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Kathy.
Hello, Amy.
You held a news conference today. What did you say?
Amy, we said that the United States had chosen to unilaterally bomb Iraq without consulting fully with the Security Council, and that the time is now for people and countries all around the world to unilaterally start trading with Iraq, start buying Iraqi oil. We ourselves bought Iraqi oil. We poured it into a lantern that we then held up, and we declared the embargo over. And we, holding up this lantern, we're encouraging other countries to do just what we've done, start to buy the oil so that Iraqis will have the money to buy the medicines they need and the food that they need. These situations in terms of medicine and food are still desperate and made even worse by the bombardment.
Kathy, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering right now, what does Baghdad look like? What is the situation of the country right now after 70 hours of bombing?
Well, you certainly can talk to people and find out what a nightmare it was for them. We went to a maternity hospital and babies were being born while the windows were shattered and falling in on top of the beds. We went to a hospital where an entire wing had to be evacuated because a bomb that had been destined for the old defense ministry caused such severe damage in the main hospital in Baghdad. And also many people don't want to bring their children to hospitals, even if they're sick, because they're afraid that they might be near sensitive targets. But today I had an opportunity to go to visit with a man whose home, while they slept at 4 a.m., was visited by a missile. This home was near no target that you could imagine. I went out to visit it. It was in the far distant suburbs. This man is still in the hospital with a broken jaw and leg wounds and paralysis on one side of his face. His tiny daughter is also in the hospital along with his wife. And this missile just came in through their living room. So people are trading stories like that. It heightens the anxiety, certainly, and yet there is an incredible dignity. I think people feel that they sustained a very nightmarish moment, and still their life goes on, trying to maintain some semblance of routine and sanity. I can't imagine my city or yours ever being able to accomplish the same after what they've been through.
Are they saying the number of casualties?
Deputy Prime Minister Tariq Aziz held a press conference last night and reported 46 casualties amongst the military. It's uncertain how many civilian casualties, and yet I think, we visited 16 people in one hospital,
we have
two
10
in another.
Seconds.
But just to say that it's the infrastructure damage that will again cause ongoing suffering, but the sanctions are now the main form of warfare here.
Kathy Kelly, thank you very much for joining us from Baghdad. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with my co-host Juan Gonzalez. Welcome, Juan.
Good day, Amy, and to all of our listeners across the country.
Well, I encourage people to stay tuned for the entire show today. It's an extremely significant one. As the sex lives and extramarital relationships of President Clinton and other elected officials continue to dominate the headlines all over the country, Democracy Now! Is focusing today on who else some powerful members of Congress are in bed with. In the last few days, the Washington Post has been reporting, as well as the Los Angeles Times, on the connections of Congressmember Bob Barr and Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott to the Council of Conservative Citizens, a white organization that regularly publishes anti-Black, anti-Latino, anti-immigration, and anti-gay literature in its newsletters and on its webpage, and whose members often have ties to neo-Nazi and other racist groups. Both have given speeches at CCC events, and Barr spoke at a CCC event as recently as this past June 4th and 5th in Charleston, South Carolina. The Southern Poverty Law Center, a group that monitors racist groups, has just released a report on the Council of Conservative Citizens establishing these links. And as word of Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott's activities with the council got out, including a statement in a 92 speech to the group that the people in this room stand up for the right principles and the right philosophy, the senator's spokesman, John Zorataki, disassociated Lott from the group and sharply criticized the organization. He said the group harbors views that the senator firmly rejects and that he absolutely has no involvement with them, either now or in the future. But what does that say about the past? And is that true about his relationship with them today? What kind of relationship has Lott maintained with the CCC, a group that on its webpage and newsletters makes pronouncements such as genocide via the bedroom is just as long-lasting as genocide via the gas chamber, this about racial mixing? And despite Lott's assertions that his contact with the Council of Conservative Citizens was limited to a single speech 10 years ago while he was still in the House, it's now clear he's also addressed the gatherings on several other occasions when he was senator, once in 92, another time in 1995. In fact, Juan, you have a very interesting piece in the New York Daily News today called Powerful Senator with Questionable Ties that also talks about this.
Well, yes, not only did he address the group more times than he would like to admit, but the Washington Post on Saturday in an article, in an opinion column by one of their editorial writers, Colbert King, mentions that he has on his desk a copy of a 1997 newsletter of the Council of Conservative Citizens, which indicates that Lott met in his Washington office with top leaders of the CCC as recently as 1997. And there's a photo in the newsletter of the Council of Conservative Citizens showing Lott and several of the major leaders.
Well, we're going to talk now with one of those leaders. In fact, he is the chief executive officer of the group, Gordon Lee Baum. He joins us now. He is the CEO of the Council of Conservative Citizens and a St. Louis attorney. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Mr. Baum.
Glad to be on your program.
Can you tell us first just what the Council of Conservative Citizens is?
The Council of Concerned Citizens is a nationwide organization. We have members in every state and nation in six foreign countries. We have active chapters in 26 states. The primary mission of the Council of Concerned Citizens is to serve as a voice and as an active advocate for the no longer silent conservative majority. And we're basically a Tenth Amendment group. We believe in the closer the government is to the people, the more responsive it tends to be. And we're in favor of local government and state government over a strong central government.
Well, Mr. Baumbus, I understand that you you reject the label that was put on you in some of these Washington Post articles as a white supremacist organization. Would you clarify why you object to that that label or title, and what your group would be characterized on in terms of racial relations?
Yes, Juan. The label white supremacist was unfortunate. In fact, the reporter. Edisol for the Washington Post apologized for it. He did not include it in his first article. He's written three about us. And it was unfortunately, according to him, an editor that assigned the label in the headline. And unfortunately, when it goes out on AP Wire, a lot of people are kind of lazy and they pick up on that. We reject that title. We do nothing that could be construed as, or do we advocate the oppression or exploitation of other races or ethnic groups? We are unabashedly a group that primarily speaks out for white European civilization, faith, and form of government. But that doesn't necessarily relate to being anti-anyone, and it certainly doesn't say that whites are supreme or that we even are segregationist. We believe that a lot of these issues ought to be decided at the local level. But I find nothing in our materials from the organization itself, in our brochure, in our various publications that we put out, from the organization itself that advocates white supremacy. I might add that we are not entirely a white group. On our application, and probably two-thirds of our membership comes to us through the mail. People pick up on it in a variety of sources. And there's no question as a person's ethnic background or race or religion or anything of that nature. And we don't know who all of our members are. We got between 15 and 20,000 members. But we do know those that are active, and we have non-white members that are active within the organization.
Well, Mr. Baum, in the report that the Southern Poverty Law Center put out last week, they describe a December meeting that one of their members claims to have attended at the Washington, D.C. chapter of your organization. And just to quote from their report, they say that arriving at a meeting in December, the first thing the visitor notices while signing in on the CCC roster is David Duke's brand new autobiography on the table for sale. Let me just finish this quote. On another table, copies of Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott's column, quote, "Protecting Our Borders," lie alongside a handout entitled, quote, "AIDS, the Fruits of Interracial Mating." There is extremist literature from the Resistance Records, the National Alliance, the America's First Party, and even a far-right paramilitary group in Northern Ireland. How does the kind of literature that they claim that's being sold at your chapter meetings?
Well, none of a lot of our local chapter meetings, we're stricter with it at our national meetings. But at the local chapter level, they have a lot of autonomy. None of the material that you described, except perhaps the newspaper with Trent Lott's article in it, was material that's either being vended by or promoted by the Council of Concerned Citizens. A lot of times, people that attend these functions, and this goes for groups on the left as well as the right one, I'm sure you've been around enough meetings to know this, people drag stuff to the meetings and set it up. And some of our local chapters are stricter than others about what you can put out on the tables. But that is because it's there. It is none of these are promoted by us. None of this material. We're not connected with any of these groups you just mentioned in any shape, fashion, or form at any level. And this because that material's there does not necessarily mean that we are promoting that view of those particular material. But we do feel, and this is kind of hypocritical on the parts of liberals, much is made about First Amendment rights and freedom of speech. Just like in our newspaper, we carry a sundry myriad of articles by a number of people, some of whom are not even members, that write. And on our website, it's the same thing. And it seems peculiar to me that you will have liberals baying that we ought to have First Amendment rights in the libraries and in schools and in newspapers. But that seems to only go for those that material which is left of center. Well, we have sort of the same attitude for material right of center, but we are not so hypocritical that we condemn the left wing for doing the same thing. For instance, in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch here in St. Louis, they carry articles by people that are avowed Marxists, but does that make them necessarily a Marxist newspaper? I don't think anybody could rashly argue that. But this, you know...
Well, let me ask you something, Mr. Baum. You know, columnists that say things like...
One columnist said
something like, right, the population is turning into a slimy brown mass of glop.
That was something that was on our website that I was unaware of. Unfortunately, some of that stuff sneaks on. But that gentleman is not a member connected. I think his name is Mallard or something like that. He does not speak for the organization. But again, there are things that are said.
But, Mr. Baum, your organization has a whole section of the webpage is just a series of his columns, as opposed to contributions.
Well, we don't pay him for those columns. We don't necessarily buy into view. Our website is quite large. I'm sure if you visited, you're aware of that. And it's easy to go in there and selectively pick out particular points of view, but there's contrary points of view. Let me give you an example. At the meeting in Washington, D.C., which I did not attend, but according to the paper reports about it, newspaper reports, and those that did attend it, the speaker himself was a man that was part Jewish. There were at least one black in attendance. There was a gentleman who got up, made some pretty neo-fascist remarks, who was not a member. But then another member stood up and identified himself as Jewish and took umbrage with it. And you have this free flow of ideas. And our local meetings and our newspaper and our website are primarily to deal with issues that is ignored in the general liberal media. I mean, let's face it, 90% of the media in this country, I mean, these are statistics we're not making up off the top of our head, but for instance, in Missouri, and Missouri is atypical, 90% of the daily newspapers and radio stations are owned by outside chains. A handful of people in this country control most of the media. Groups like Pacifica are not the ordinary. You know, you have huge chains. And so we are rationed out what we're supposed to think. And what happens to the whole concept of a free flow of ideas? Are all of these ideas that people, and I'm not going to defend Mallard because I've truthfully never read much of his stuff. I don't know that much about him. I don't go on our website. That's not my field.
Well, let me ask something, since, as you said, that's where a lot of the people that become a member of your organization first hear about you. This Mallard, who has the series of columns Mallard on your website, Mallard?
Whatever.
says genocide in the tan, every man, the genocide being carried out against white people hasn't come with marching armies.
We wouldn't quibble with that. I mean, that's a statement of fact. There's a real problem with that, whether you want to recognize it or not. The fact of the matter is the white Europeans are the smallest of the groups on the face of the earth. And the way that is going with their low birth rate and with the fact that even in Europe, 10% of England is now non-white, that it is, in the not-too-distant future, it's conceivable that the white race will become extinct. Now, is there something really horrendous about saying what is true? The President of the United States boasts of the fact that within a short period of time, this will no longer be a majority white country. And the position we take, that doesn't make us white supremacists any more than it would indigenous people and say, Africa would be opposed to the fact that their country was being, the indigenous people there were disappearing because others have migrated into their country. You know, this ethnicity is a two-edged sword.
Mr. Baum, we have to break, and I did want to ask one last question, which is about your meeting with Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott last year in his office in Washington. What did you discuss?
Well, first place, let me explain. The Council of Conservative Citizens is the strongest in the South. In Mississippi, we are probably the most powerful organization in the state. We have some 20, 30 members in the state legislature. With us was our senior field coordinator, who's a county medical examiner for Mississippi, Mr. Lord. And what we discussed with him was our agenda, our opposition to specific legislation. See, we're a specific issue, or, you know, we're not a religion. We don't have a theology. we're involved in specific issues. What we discussed with Trent Lott, and unfortunately he didn't carry through with much of what we requested of him, is that something primarily be done about affirmative action quotas, which we're opposed to. And we also discussed with him a whole myriad of topics of conservative interest, like lesser government return, which is being done, returning power back to the states and control over welfare and so forth.
Well, Mr. Baum, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. We'll come back with you, and then we'll be joined by a number of other people. Gordon Baum is the CEO of the Council of Conservative Citizens, as he describes his meeting last year with Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman, here with Juan Gonzalez, as we continue with our conversation with Gordon Lee Baum, who's the CEO of the Council of Conservative Citizens, met last year with Trent Lott, the Senate Majority Leader. Earlier this year, Georgia Congressmember Bob Barr addressed their national convention in South Carolina. Juan?
Mr. Baum, getting back to this report that the Southern Poverty Law Center issued last week, they claim, their main claim is that your organization is actually a reincarnation of the old white citizens' councils of the late 1950s and 60s that opposed desegregation throughout the South. And they mentioned, for instance, that both you and Bill Lord, who you mentioned also met with Senator Trent Lott last year, were organizers for the old white citizens' councils in the 1960s. Is that accurate or inaccurate? And
part of it's accurate, Juan, mm-hmm. and part of it's inaccurate. As a matter of fact, and I don't hide it, you can go to Who's Who and look it up. It's not a secret. I was a Midwest field director for the Citizens Councils of America. It was never known as the White Citizens Council. That was an adjective used by the liberal press, but the actual name was the Citizens Councils of America. It was the dominant organization in the South. For instance, if you read former President Jimmy Carter's book, he comments in there that he was the only white man in his county that did not belong to it. His father and his uncle and his brother all belonged to it. It was a very powerful organization with over 1 million members, and they were, at the time, primarily for states' rights. They were not all necessarily for segregation. They were opposed to the federal intervention into the states. There was a huge number of congressmen, senators, and governors involved to it. Now, so that part's true. The part that's untrue, this was not an outgrowth of the citizens' councils. The citizens' councils were still in existence after the Council of Conservative Citizens was formed. Now, do we have in our ranks a lot of people in the South? Not a lot, but maybe 5-10% of our members that might have been in the past elderly people that belong to the Citizens Council. We've never polled them, but I wouldn't doubt that's the case. But these people were not anything comparable to groups like the Klan or anything else. If you read all these reports, these were made of the best people in the community, the local business people and the farmers and the working people and the middle class. This was a very reputable organization. It was never involved in violence nor advocating violence. It was purely a political organization that was primarily involved in the restoration of states' rights. And it was a very popular cause, and there's still a number of people that advocate it. But as a matter of pure fact, we are not an outgrowth of them. When we met in Atlanta, Georgia, we were primarily concerned that there wasn't any real organization, effective organization, among conservatives.
Were you concerned that when Trent Lott's spokesperson had to respond to your group, he said, this group harbors views that the senator firmly rejects, despite the fact when senator...
Well, that wasn't the senator that said it.
No, that was a spokesperson, despite the fact the senator himself had said the people in this room stand up for the right principles.
Maybe he finds some views that he disagrees with. I'm not really sure. We've never discussed it with Senator Lott. We don't own politicians. We've had all kind of people speak to us, congressmen, senators, local officials, governors, etc. And do they always, and the political figures that we deal with, do they always agree with us on everything? Probably not. Do we agree with Trent Lott on everything? No. We don't agree with Trent Lott. Just because somebody comes speaks to us or even writes something for our publication doesn't necessarily put us in a position where we have to buy their whole agenda.
Right, but didn't your group claim credit for his one-vote win in 1994 over Alan Simpson of Wyoming as the majority whip before he became majority leader?
We believe that we played an important role in that, not at his bidding, mind you. I'm not even sure if Senator Lott's even aware of it. But because we're the strongest in the South, we have a lot of people that are elected officials and Republican officials and even some Democrats. And we put a lot of pressure on some Republican senators, particularly in the Mid-South, to support Senator Trent Lott for that position. And we feel we played a very important role in his getting elected. But Senator Lott was probably not aware that we were doing this. But we felt that at the time that he would be preferable to his opponent.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Gordon Lobaum. I want to thank you very much. We have a lot of people who are on the line right now to speak, including the uncle of Senator Trent Lott, who is a former Mississippi state senator, World War II veteran, and a member of your group, the Council of Conservative Citizens. Gordon Lobaum has been with us. He is the CEO of the Council of Conservative Citizens. Arnie Watson joins us from Carroll County, Mississippi, and we want to welcome you to Democracy Now! Welcome, Arnie Watson.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today. We were just wondering if you can tell us a little about your organization, the Council of Conservative Citizens, and why you're one of the executives of that group.
Well, we have a meeting once a month and discuss local problems and political problems especially. And we write into the different headquarters, and then the Citizen Council puts out magazines and newspapers. And so,
what do you see as the major political problem of our day?
Well, of course, we deal a lot with the Veterans Affairs and then the high taxes and things like that, and the different governmental problems.
Now, your relation to the senator, the Senate Majority Leader, how is he related to you? You are his uncle.
He's my sister next to me. It's her son.
Uh-huh. Now, we have a picture of you meeting of your group, the Council of Conservative Citizens, meeting with Senator Lott last year in Washington. Gordon Lobaum, who we just had on, who's the CEO of the group and one of the organizers of the Citizens' Councils, the white Citizens' Councils of the 1960s. Were you also at that meeting?
No, but our organization chairman here in Carolyn was Bill Lord from Greenwood. Mm-hmm. He was there. He makes all of them.
Mr. Watson, there's been some criticism in the national press in Washington lately of the of your organization, and Senator Lott himself has attempted to distance himself a little bit from it. But I know Senator Lott has spoken to your group at many times in the past.
Oh yeah.
Could you tell us in terms of what his support for the group has been like?
Oh, well, he just being a boy from the country and grew up as a hard-working boy, he just knows the problems better than a lot of people does. and he knows how to deal with them.
We've just been reading some of the quotes that come out of the newsletter of the Council of Conservative Citizens, since there are a number of columnists who write for it. And one of the ones we just said on the air, but because you weren't on with us at the time, it says genocide is being carried out against white people. And it says that it hasn't come with marching armies. Instead, it's come with propaganda calculated to brainwash whites into happily and willingly jumping into the neo-melting pot. And it says genocide via the bedroom chamber is just as long-lasting as genocide via the gas chamber. And it talks about the tan everyman. Could you explain that?
No, I didn't read it, but I've heard a lot of discussions on it, but I try not to participate in it.
Where does your group stand, the Council of Conservative Citizens, around the issue of integration, around the issue of blacks in this country?
Well, they're in favor of going along and let each side look after their own business.
Keeping things separate?
Yes.
And
well, in some ways, but everyday life, naturally, they're going to be pretty closely associated.
Have you ever how did Senator Lott get involved with the Council of Conservative Citizens? Did you get him involved, or was did he join on his own? Or
I guess he did it on his own.
But you've never attended meetings with him, or
well, he spoke to our organization different times. He's come to Greenwood, Mississippi, and spoke.
In fact, aren't a number of members of your family a part of the Council of Conservative Citizens?
Well, I guess I'm about the only one I know of. I got another brother, but he's in Tennessee, and I don't think he is. But most of the male members here in this vicinity are members.
Let me just ask you one last question, Mr. Watson, and that is on the issue of race. Would you say that is a major issue that your organization, the Council of Conservative Citizens, takes up?
Well, it used to be, but there's not much. It's not brought up very much now.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Again, Arnie Watson is a member of the Council of Conservative Citizens. So we're speaking to him from Carroll County, Mississippi, and he is the uncle of Senator Trent Lott. And he himself is a World War II veteran and a former state senator from Mississippi. We're going to go right now to Mark Potok, who is the person at the Southern Poverty Law Center in Birmingham, Alabama, who has put out the report just yesterday on the Council of Conservative Citizens. That report is called Sharks in the Mainstream and charges that racism underlies the so-called conservative group. And we welcome you to Democracy Now!, Mark Potok. Can you tell us the major findings of your report?
Well, we looked over council publications and the kind of political histories of some of the leaders over the last 9 or 10 years. And what we found was this is, at least in its literature and in its leadership, an out-and-out racist group, a white supremacist group. One didn't need to look very hard at all to find that kind of literature, that kind of propaganda in their statements. You know, the other things we found were that, you know, the links between the Council of Conservative Citizens and the predecessor organization, the White Citizens Councils, were very strong and very concrete. One of their chief columnists, a guy named Robert Patterson, was in fact the founder of the original Citizens Councils, the White Citizens Councils, back in 1954. You know, there are also several, and well, another thing we did was the membership is not public. Gordon Baum and other leaders do not make their membership list public.
Well, Mark, if I could interrupt you for a second, we just had on Gordon Baum, and we asked him about this whole issue of the relationship of their group to the citizens' councils. And he, one, objected, first of all, to the use of the words white citizens' councils. He said the real term, the real name of the organization was the Citizens' Councils of America, and that the White Citizens' Council was just a label put on it by liberals. And he also says that while he acknowledged that perhaps 10% or so of the membership of his group belonged to the old Citizens' Councils, he says that the Citizens' Councils were actually a very respectable group throughout the South, had massive membership, and represented some of the best people in the business communities of the South, and was really a states' rights group more than anything else. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it's essentially hogwash. I mean, it's not me. It's true that the official name was the CCA. However, it is not I who have, you know, or some, you know, nefarious liberal establishment who sort of appended this name. This is what they were known as back in the 50s and 60s, and this is, in fact, what most historians call them. So I think that's essentially an academic judgment and not me or the Southern Poverty Law Center trying to, you know, somehow diss the old white citizens' councils. You know, as for being the, you know, this terribly respectable organization and so on, again, you know, most historians who have looked at this, essentially called them the white-collar Klan. You know, the citizens' councils back in the 50s and 60s, were absolutely, you know, it's simply untrue that their main objective was states' rights, or if it was states' rights, it was states' rights simply to battle desegregation, to battle integration of schools, and so on. The old citizens' councils were also tied to a fair amount of violence, not a great deal compared to the real Klan. You know, but there are instances of real horrors taking place, you know, I mean, of a man in Alabama being castrated by members of the Citizens Council and so on. So I think that any reasonable historian will tell you that is, you know, false, that this was this sort of upstanding organization formed merely to, you know, fight for the sort of ideological right of states to conduct their own affairs.
Mark Potok, we're going to have to break for stations to identify themselves. But before we do, we wanted to squeeze in another of the people we're going to be talking to today, and then we'll continue with her as well after the break, Congressmember Cynthia McKinney. And she has denounced Congressmember Barr and Senate Majority Leader Lott's connections with the Council of Conservative Citizens. And she says that Barr, that hypocrisy seems alive and well in the 7th District of Georgia. We welcome you as well, Congressmember McKinney, to Democracy Now.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts today as it comes out more clearly that Congressmember Barr addressed the Council of Conservative Citizens this past June? Senator Lott has addressed them a number of times. Most recently, last year, had a meeting with the leadership in his offices in Washington.
Well, you have to remember that I'm from the South. I am a Southerner. And unfortunately for us, the Civil War is still being waged. It's alive and well down here. We're still fighting to take the Confederate flag off of our official buildings in the South. So when the people of the United States voted the Republicans into the majority in Congress, what they voted for was for the ascendancy of Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia in charge of the civil rights and human rights and all kinds of public policy, both domestic and foreign, in charge of this country. It's a shame.
Congressmember Cynthia McKinney from Georgia and Mark Potok from the Southern Poverty Law Center. We're going to break for stations to ID themselves, and then we will be back. We're also hoping to play an excerpt of Bob Barr's speech before the Council of Conservative Citizens, so do stay with us.
The name of this tune is Mississippi Goddamn. I mean every word of it. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Alabama's gotten me so upset.
Tennessee made me lose my rest, and everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn, can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest, and everybody knows about Mississippi. Goddamn! This is a show tune, but the show hasn't been written for it yet.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we address the issue of the Council of Conservative Citizens. Some call it a white supremacist group, although not the members of that group. They make some distinctions. Congressmember Bob Barr recently addressed a national convention of the group, and Senator Trent Lott, the Senate Majority Leader of Mississippi, has spoken before the group a number of times. Both men, since it's gotten publicity, have disavowed any connection to the group. Juan?
Congresswoman McKinney, we were speaking a few minutes ago with Gordon Baum, the chief executive of the Council of Conservative Citizens, and asking him about the group's ties to the old white citizens' councils back in the 50s and 60s. He acknowledged that perhaps maybe 10% of the current membership and some of the leaders did originate with the old citizens' councils, but he says, first of all, look, we have about 30 members of our current organization who are in the Mississippi legislature. He says that they're one of the most powerful groups in Mississippi, and that the old citizens councils were actually a respectable organization that was for states' rights and was not in any way related to the Ku Klux Klan or to any violent segregationist groups. Is that your understanding or perception of what the citizens councils were about?
Well, now, you have to understand that I'm not an expert in the citizens' councils. However, I am certainly an expert in the effects of these kinds of organizations and their impact on the rights of American citizens. Now, I'm on their website right now. They've got their war is one of the buttons on their website, and it describes their war as, quote, to preserve us as a people. And who are they threatened by? They're threatened by northern liberals who are waging a religious war to stamp out Christianity, and they are threatened by blacks. Now, this is very clear. You can talk in code words all you want, and we can be nice and politically correct, but the bottom line is that these are neo-Confederates. They are racist. These are not the people who stood in the front of the lines trying to help all Americans achieve the right to participate in the American dream. These are the people that the good-thinking people of America from the North and the South were fighting against.
Mark Potok, in terms of the relationship of the Council of Conservative Citizens to neo-fascist or right-wing groups in other parts of the world, what have you found?
Well, what we found primarily as far as overseas links was in the person of Juan Mark Cotterill, who is the leader of the Washington, D.C. area council chapter. Cotterill was going by the name of Mark Kerr, and in fact was quoted a couple of times last week in the Washington Post as Mark Kerr. We found he was actually this fellow, Mark Cotterill, who is an official of both the National Front and its successor, a neo-fascist organization in Britain, the British National Party. He's also been connected with extremist Protestant organizations in Northern Ireland. Beyond that, there are connections to other groups within the states, like the National Alliance, which is headed up by William Pierce, the author of the sort of infamous Turner Diaries, and a number of other groups. There's a fairly significant amount of overlap in Klan membership. What we did was we looked at the membership as much as we could find. We came up with about 175 names of people who were members mentioned in their various publications. And, we were able to document from our own files that about 10% of the people whose names were mentioned were, in fact, members or had been members of the Klan or a Klan-like neo-Nazi organization, the National Association for the Advancement of White People, and similar kinds of organizations.
We wanted to play for our listeners just a brief excerpt of what Congressmember Bob Barr had to say at that national convention of the Council of Conservative Citizens. We are going to have it set up by a person who was recording the event. He doesn't want to be identified. And he sort of sets the scene for us, and then he'll play a clip.
Well, you know, this was the Council of Conservative Citizens annual convention, June 5th and 6th in Charleston, South Carolina. And it was held in a relatively small hotel, motel, really, conference room. And so it was maybe between 50 and 60 people. And I think what might be very interesting to people who have been following this story is that it would be very difficult to enter the room without realizing right away that this is an organization that is based on race. In fact, it's a matter that they don't obfuscate. They're quite straightforward about it. For example, there were a number of vendors selling books that ranged from, on the first day, sort of Holocaust revisionist titles by historian David Irving, to, you know, straight-up race books about, you know, sort of pseudoscientific books about the Nordic race or what have you, and then a whole slew of Confederate memorabilia in terms, you know, sort of revisionist American history sources. And then Bob Barr spoke on the second day, and I think it would be foolish to try to pin him down as making a incriminating appearance, but I think it's very, very shady that somebody with the political power of Congressman Barr to be delivering the keynote address at an organization that identifies itself as a group of racialist paleoconservatives. He was speaking at the exact same podium where one day earlier a member of the organization had elicited laughter and applause by referring to black people as a bunch of monkeys.
Why don't you set up this clip for us that you're going to play, that you recorded?
Well, this is simply a 2 or 3 minute clip of the congressman's address where he, you know, makes reference to some Kurt Vonnegut novel, and I believe it's The Sirens of Titan, although he didn't identify it. And it's just a story about people in the future who are more intelligent or more strong than the average citizen, and they're forced to be handicapped or dumbed down in order to fit in with society. And I believe, to paraphrase him, he says that this is happening in America today, which is something, it's suggestive. It's certainly not explicit, and I wouldn't want to go on the record as accusing him of making a racist comment, but given the circumstances and given the audience, it smells like a rat.
Well, let's go to Congressmember Bob Barr.
I remember also, and I don't remember the name of this. It was a movie, and I think it may have been one of the early made-for-TV movies because I remember seeing it on TV, and it was right around the time that President Nixon made his trip to China, which I guess would put it in about 71 or 72 time frame. And it was a movie by a fellow named Kurt Vonnegut, who wrote Slaughterhouse-Five. And I don't remember the name of this movie, but it was a very interesting movie, and it had to do, as many of his works did, with time travel and going to different dimensions. In this particular one, this fellow found himself in a futuristic world. And in this futuristic world, and he had somebody that was showing him around, he noticed several strange things. He noticed that a lot of people walking around carrying large, what appeared to him to be sandbags, very, very heavy. And he noticed also both some of those same people as well as other people that weren't carrying around the sandbags were wearing these headphones constantly. And he asked his guy that was taking him around this futuristic world, he said, "What are those? I see people with what appear to be sandbags on their shoulders, weighting them down. And I see other people, and indeed some of those same people, with these earphones." And he said, "What are they listening to music?" And he said, "No, let me show you." So he took the earphones off of one person and put them on this fellow that found himself in this futuristic world. And it was this constant loud screeching sound. might sound a lot like music nowadays, but back then it was this loud screeching sound. And he took them off. He couldn't even think while he had them on. And he said, why would somebody wear those? And why would somebody carry those things? And the man said, those are called handicappers. And he said, handicappers? He said, what do you mean handicappers? And he said, well, this is an egalitarian society. We don't want some people to be stronger than others so that they could excel at tasks and accomplish more than somebody else. So for those people that are cursed with having greater strength than somebody else, that higher, greater strength than the norm, we make them wear those sandbags, those handicappers, and that makes them equal with other people. And for those people who are cursed with having a higher intelligence than the average, which gives them an unfair advantage over those of just average intelligence, we make them wear those handicapper ear sets so that it disrupts their ability to utilize what they should not have, and that is that higher intelligence. Well, indeed, that may have been a fantasy movie back in the early 70s, as the Bizarro World comics were back in the 60s. But indeed, when we look at what's happening in this country today, it really appears more to be the reality than the imaginative world of some futurist. And indeed, the signs for what is happening today were there long ago.
And that is Congressmember Bob Barr of Georgia addressing the Council of Conservative Citizens. Not very explicit what he's saying, but Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center, what do you make of it? I should say, as the person who recorded this described it to us, he was standing in front of the Confederate flag and the sign for the Council of Conservative Citizens with its URL, which is where so many of the people connect with the CCC. And Juan was just talking about, as was Mark and Mr. Baum himself, talking about the kinds of things that are on that website, talking about genocide taking place now as a result of the bedroom rather than the gas chamber.
Well, the way I see it is not so much as an explicit sort of racialist comment as a part of the attack by this group and groups like it on, you know, what they see as a kind of socialistic imposition of egalitarianism on Americans, and particularly on Southern Americans. You hear very similar kinds of statements from, I think, relatively more moderate groups like the League of the South. It's this whole idea that egalitarianism is being, you know, shoved down the throats of Americans, and that what it really is this, you know, this kind of absurd philosophy that Vonnegut did portray in his novel.
Congressmember McKinney, before the show is over, I did want to address a press release you put out about Bob Barr, where you say, first whipped cream from a breast, now a keynote address before white supremacists. What embarrassment will Bob Barr give us next? What are you referring to?
Well, in 1992, Congressman Barr licked whipped cream from the bare breast of a woman, and I know he wishes that he had not done that. Yet he refuses to answer questions in public about it. He wishes that question would just disappear. I'm sure with the same kind of feeling and intensity of feeling that President Clinton wishes that these questions had never been
asked. Did he do that in public?
Yes, he did. And so I began to think about a whole host of questions that I would like to pose to the good congressman in public and see what his responses would be. He doesn't answer them. And then, of course, this address here is not anything that surprises me. We know I've done some work in the 7th District now, and I know that the people of that district are even more and more embarrassed by the conduct of their congressmen. But this is the kind of thing that I think Americans at large would like to wish away. But those of us who live here in the South, and of course the wonderful work of the Southern Poverty Law Center, exposes the harsh reality that not only in urban areas in the South, but people are victimized in rural areas of the South. And so, unfortunately, while we are looking at the waning days of legislation such as the enforcement of the Voting Rights Act and the preclearance requirement, these kinds of organizations and politicians that stem from them and cater to them are alive and well. And what that means is that we're going to have communities of Americans across this country who will be left defenseless as a result of the longevity and the continued viability of not only these organizations, but the mentality that spawns them.
And Congresswoman McKinney, I'd like to ask you, in the report that the Southern Poverty Law Center produced last week, they mentioned a meeting that was held by the Washington chapter of this Council of Conservative Citizens, where at the front entrance as they walked in, this was a meeting held this month, the person found David Duke's brand new autobiography on the table for sale, a handout entitled AIDS, the Fruit of Interracial Mating. He found extremist literature from Resistance Records, the National Alliance, the America First Party. And there, alongside all that other literature, they found a copy of Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott's column, Protecting Our Borders. How does it make you feel that Senator Trent Lott will be deciding the rules of the Senate for the trial of President Clinton when his literature is in such dubious company at CCC meetings?
I was literally castigated when I called some of the people that we were fighting in our redistricting battle, neo-Confederates. But I'm not surprised. This seems to only surprise people who are disconnected somehow from the daily life that we Southerners, and particularly those of us who are Southerners and minorities, have to deal with. I am not surprised. But unfortunately, fortunately, we have Pacifica and we have Southern Poverty Law Center to bring attention to these organizations and these issues. And, you know, I just think back at the Oklahoma bombing, the rhetoric that has been unleashed is now making its way into the highest levels of public policy making in our country. And these are the people who are responsible not only for our own domestic rights, but for U.S. conduct abroad. It's very, very sad.
I want to thank you both very much for being with us. That is Georgia Congressmember Cynthia McKinney, Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Also, I want to thank Steve Rendell, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, which first brought this to our attention and will continue to follow the Council of Conservative Citizens and the relationship it has with various politicians today, talking about Bob Barr and Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion and Mario Murillo. Errol Maitland is our technical director, Michelle Garcia our web spinner, Julie Drizin our executive producer. From the studios of WBAI in New York, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
Well, that's just the trouble.
Of the past 48 hours, 72 hours, and what's happened in Washington, from Washington to Baghdad. That does it for today's program. If you'd like a copy, 1-800-735-0230 is the number to call. Maria Carrion is our producer, with Mario Murillo and Donna Neiman. Errol Maitland's our technical director. Julie Drizin, our executive producer. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!
This is KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM, Pacifica Radio. For all of Southern California, up for air with Kathy Gorey and Marcos Fromer is next. That's right here on listener-sponsored KPFK, 90.7 FM. Stay tuned.
You're listening to KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California.
This is our mission, to contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and